It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. And I am here today, as usual, with my wonderful, I didn't say beautiful, wonderful, it could be for a male or female, she okay. happens to be female, Michelle Lobato.
Here I am, the wonderful.
The wonderful.
Yeah.
Ms. Wonderful. And I know you are very involved in politics.
Sometimes. Yeah.
You like to
see. We've had some political people on.
Yeah, political people. Everyone's political at one point or another.
That is not true. I can guarantee there are a lot of people who are apolitical.
That may be true, but I know that you're interested in what people wear, the
yes.
politicians.
Tells you a lot about them.
You know, if, for instance, they don't wear a tie, I think it shows.
They're trying to be of the people, you know.
And a little casual, and I yeah. think it's good sometimes. Huh. I'm not wearing a tie today, and our guest, I'm sure, will not be wearing a tie because he typically doesn't. But we did go and ask everyone who was trying to be the governor of this state whether they wanted to come on,
mm-hmm.
and we're happy to say that Steve Hilton accepted our offer, and he's going to be with us today.
That's so exciting. I mean, running for governor, that's a huge thing, especially from, I think California's economy is like number 8 in the world. It's no small gig.
It's only huge if you win. If you lose, you just lost a lot of money. And there are certain candidates, I won't name them, who maybe have spent a lot of money on their campaign. And who knows?
Jeez.
He yeah. may get elected with all the money he has. But the fact of the matter is that they have to survive the June 2nd election to get to the runoff
yep.
in November.
Mm-hmm.
And two candidates for governor will do so. Who they will be, we will find out very soon. But what we want to do right now is hear from one of the leading candidates, Steve Hilton. He is someone who may just be the next governor of California.
So I'm going to forego our little discussion today, and we're going to get right to it. And by the way, Michelle, I want you to know you are the only person here who was born in this country.
Wow.
Canada for me, Steve, Britain, Great Britain. And we might talk a little bit about immigration. And we got two immigrants with you. So we're doing pretty good. So hopefully that'll be a good symbol and a sign for the country when we bring in legal immigrants. But we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. So Steve Hilton is the or a, depending on what poll you look at, leading candidate for governor of California, the election coming up June 2nd. He is the or a leading candidate. He's the former British and American political commentator. He still does commentary. He was the former host on Fox News, of course. He was the director of strategy for British Prime Minister David Cameron. And a lot of people would say that David Cameron owes a lot to his political success for Steve's input. He hosted The Next Revolution, a weekly current affairs show for Fox from 2017-2023. He's co-founder of the crowdfunding platform CrowdPack, and he has been a very successful political commentator. But something that's really important that I think is maybe most important is his father was a goalie for the Hungarian national hockey team in the Olympics in 1936 and in ice hockey and field hockey. And being Canadian and devoting my life to hockey, that is something that really stands out in Steve's background. Steve, welcome to Gervie's Law.
It's wonderful to be with you. I'm so happy that we could make this happen. Very much looking forward to the conversation. I just want to add one thing into the mix in terms of the introduction, which is that I'm actually, the more I think about this job that I'm running for and what it's going to take to do the job effectively, I think in a way, my best qualification for that is the fact that most of my career has actually been in business, working in business in the UK and around the world, starting my own companies. You mentioned one of them, Crowdpack, but back in the day, I started companies in England, including a consulting firm and a couple of restaurants. And I think it's that very pragmatic, problem-solving business mindset that we really need in our government right now.
And Steve, we'll talk about this. And you say that's the most important thing, or probably one of the most important. I'm not going to disagree there. But I do want to ask, I'm getting back to your father, the goalie.
Yes.
He obviously had hundreds of pucks shot at him. In those days, they didn't wear the mask, although in the 1936 Olympics, I remember reading that there was a Japanese goalie who actually wore a mask. What did you learn from your father in terms of a guy who, as a goalie, just maybe a little different, putting himself in front of so many pucks and being able to protect himself and stop goals from? Something must have rubbed off on you, Steve.
Well, it's so interesting. No one's ever asked me that question. I love it. I don't want to overstate it, because the truth is that my parents split up when I was a little kid. I was about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years old. And he went back to, I was born in England, and my dad went back to Hungary to live. And so I would see him at, you know, like school holiday vacations and whatever, probably 2 or 3 times a year, maybe twice a year, probably. When I would go, I'd fly back to Hungary on my own and see him. You know, so we'd do trips. And then he died when I was young-ish, you know, about, we don't know exactly, because when he died, we weren't told about it. And I didn't, that's a whole other story. Anyway, I didn't find out that he had died for many years until after he died. So my memories are not that strong, to be honest with you. My stepfather is also Hungarian, and he has an amazing story of, you know, fleeing Hungary and when the Russians invaded, the Soviets invaded, and climbing across the barbed wire fences and minefields and so on. But I think that with your question about hockey, I remember him showing me his injuries. He had a ton of injuries. And he would be like talking, you're right, he would talk about how dangerous it was. And he just said, well, you can't let the team down. That was his thing. I remember him saying, you just got to stand there and take it, because that's your job. And he would show me, like, especially, I remember he had some really bad ones in his knee, where the puck hit him in, like, below the knee or something. It was not so much in his face. But yeah, it's interesting. First time I've thought about that, like, forever, because no one's ever asked me that question before.
Well, I'm sure it formed you in one way or another with, you know, all of the relationships. And obviously, you've been a team member on so many different businesses, with Fox News. But, you know, when Karen Bass was on the show before she became elected, and by the way, people who are on the show always get elected. The last one was Hochman, district attorney for
very good.
LA. And then Karen Bass and Nathan Hochman, of course, they all get elected. So that's a good sign for you.
Well, now I'm even more happy that I found the time to do it with you. Very good.
But let me ask you this. When I had Karen on and I said, with the homelessness problem in L.A. and poverty and the illegal immigration, the high taxes, suffocating regulations, all of the problems, why would you want this gig?
You're asking me, or you're asking?
I'm asking you.
Because
she laughed, but I'm asking you L.A. is a microcosm of California with high taxes, poverty, homelessness, poor education, a lot of problems. Steve, you've been a successful businessman.
Yeah.
You run companies. You're at Saatchi & Saatchi. I'm an old Leo Burnett guy myself. But you've had so many opportunities. Doesn't it seem like a headache to you?
No, quite the opposite. It feels like an honor. And even running is an honor and a joy. We can get into that in a bit. I feel... it sounds a little pompous, honestly, but I feel a kind of duty, a calling. I don't know what you want to say. I didn't immediately enter this world of California policy and politics thinking that I was going to be running for governor. But I did start wanting to do something to help turn around our state. Because we moved here 2012 with my wife and my two sons. I love California so much. I feel at home here in a way. I don't want to be too negative about England, but I feel at home here in a way I actually never really felt before. I feel like this is where I'm meant to be. This place, the attitude, we always talk about what's special about California. Of course, we can talk about the natural beauty and the weather and the people and the diversity of our, you know, cities and places and the just incredible range of things you can do here and our amazing industries that we've built and changed the world with, etc. That's all true. But there's something else that I always mention, and it's almost the thing that connects with me most deeply. And it's a phrase that I use all the time about California, which is the rebel spirit. There's something about California. All these people who came here, there's just a vibe. It's like we don't accept things. We challenge things. We've built these amazing cities and industries out of absolutely nothing. They've all been built by misfits and rebels and people who come from, you know, look at Hollywood and who started that. Or you look at the tech industry, and that came out of the sort of 60s subculture and Stuart Brand and the Whole Earth catalog and rebels who are just like really, you know, anti-establishment people. And that's what I really connect with about California. And actually, that's what I think is being crushed by this increasingly authoritarian, bloated nanny state bureaucracy that we've had for a government that's just endlessly bossing us around, you know, telling us, you know, how to live, how to raise our kids, how to run our businesses, how to, you know, where to live, how to live, what car to drive, how to cook our food, endless busybodies interfering with absolutely everything. It is the absolute opposite of California. It is anti-California. And so I'm really driven by a kind of resistance to all of that, real hostility to all of that. Like, what are you doing to this incredible place that is so important for the world?
I appreciate what you're saying about the differences between England.
Actually, this means to America what America means to the world.
Steve, I really appreciate your commentary on the California spirit. I think another thing too is optimism. I feel like that there's a higher optimism rate here in California. Now I want to touch a bit more on your policies. So you mentioned, you know, this state attracts rebels and maybe criminals sometimes. Could you tell me about your policy on immigration?
Oh, I knew you were going to go there.
So the first point I would make is that obviously I'm pro-immigration as an immigrant myself and an immigrant twice over. My parents fled communism and were made a new life in England. And I grew up in a classic immigrant working class household, climbing the ladder of opportunity. I ended up at Oxford University, worked very hard, worked at the Conservative Party, you know, for Margaret Thatcher when she was prime minister, ended up being able to work all over the world, started my businesses, helped elect a prime minister, all those amazing things. So that story of upward mobility as an immigrant is very, very deeply within me. And I want that for every legal immigrant in California. But of course, it has to be legal. And I think that there's a very simple point here, which is how have we got to a place where we've just decided collectively that laws can be ignored when we think it's convenient, or either politically convenient or economically convenient? That's corrosive of trust in our entire system of government. I think that's what's happened with immigration. And while it's not a responsibility of the governor, obviously, it's clearly a federal matter. I'm a great believer and a fierce advocate for the 10th Amendment. I think that the 10th Amendment is way overlooked. I think that our government in America is way too centralized. Most functions of the federal government, I think, should stop and be dealt with at the state or local level. Healthcare, welfare, education, housing, none of these things should have anything to do with the federal government. But the federal government, obviously, it's one country with one border. And so it's a federal responsibility, not a state responsibility. The only question for the governor is this: as governor, will you actively obstruct the enforcement of federal law? And my answer is no, obviously not. Why would you do that? You swear to uphold all the laws. And so when I'm governor, I will make sure that all the laws are peacefully enforced. That's my responsibility.
Now in California,
anything else is a total breach of your responsibility.
Not all governors in every state feel that way, but for you, obviously, because you have the endorsement of the president, you would be more in line with the federal government as far as the government that exists now. However, the reality in California is that we have a lot of people who are demonstrating against the federal government, against the president. I see every day I drive into work, I see people demonstrating against ICE and against President Trump. Now, if there are 46% or approximately of California voters who are registered Democrats, how do you overcome that? And when you promise change, is that something that will resonate with those people or independents or everyone?
So the number I look at is the proportion of Californians who think that the state's going in the wrong direction. The last election for governor, 2022, that number was sort of mid to high 40s. Now it's mid to high 50s. It's sometimes even you see it as high as just low 60s. There's a very clear majority of Californians who think the state's going in the wrong direction and we need change. That's the majority that I'm going to be leading to victory, because we need common sense, practical changes in this state. The taxes are too high. The regulatory burden is insane. The schools are a mess. The streets are a mess. Nothing is working properly. We pay the highest taxes in the country for the worst results. We've had 16 years of one-party rule. We have a government in California without any check or balance, supermajority in the legislature, 6-1 majority in the state Supreme Court, all the major cities and the counties. It is simply not healthy to have one-party rule to such a degree for so long. It is obviously time for change. Nobody can dispute that. And that's why I'm going to win in November.
Now, you are up against Democratic candidates and one Republican. The Democratic candidates have been called lackluster. Would you agree that as a whole, they're lackluster? And what did you think, for instance, of performance in the debates recently, the most recent CNN debate?
I think they're lackluster or worse. And I think the point is
worse.
What will be there? It's less about their performance. I mean, obviously, one can critique that. It's more about substantively, what would they do for us in California? What would the impact of their election mean for every Californian, in particular, the people that I'm really fighting for in this election, working people who have been crushed the most by these Democrat policies, small businesses, like I used to be a small business owner. That's my ballot designation, actually, small business owner. Young people who are just giving up on California and despairing of their ever being able to own a home or start a business or raise a family. Yeah, that's who I'm fighting for. And the question is, what impact would any of these people have on those people? And the answer is either no change or even worse. You look at someone like Javier Becerra, he's, in his own words and the words of his supporters, the continuity candidate, more of the same. You'll get absolutely no change. We'll continue to have the highest gas prices, the highest electric bills ever except Hawaii, the highest housing costs, why? And et cetera, the worst business climate, because he's completely a creature of the system that we have now. He's an absolute living embodiment of the broken, failing system. He's done nothing but be a participant in that system for 36 years. 36 years, a career politician, Javier Becerra. He has absolutely zero attitude, aptitude, capacity, ability to bring change.
Do you think
Tom Steyer is worse because his position, I think he does have the capacity to bring change. He's shown that in his career. He's actually done things other than Becerra. But the change would be worse because on every major issue, he's far to the left, not even a little bit to the left, far to the left of what we had now. So with Tom Steyer, our taxes will be higher, gas prices will be higher, electric bills will be higher, rent will be higher, housing costs will be higher. Everything will be higher, as I put it in one of the debates, everything will be higher with Steyer.
You know,
I don't think the other candidates have any chance of winning, so I'm not sure it's worth discussing them.
Well, who would you rather run off with?
It doesn't matter, because they're Democrats, and a Democrat cannot win this election because California demands change.
And you don't think Chad Bianco will be part of the runoff, especially after the debate where he kind of shot himself in the foot, no pun intended, when he got into that little war of words with Caitlin Collins about you and about what he had said about you?
No, obviously, you just have to look at the polls. I think there's only three people, right? Unless there's some dramatic change. Of course, you can't rule that out. Look at Eric Swalwell. But barring that, there's only three people who realistically have a chance of getting into the top two. That's myself, Steyer, and Becerra. I think that the real possibility we have to look at is that if we don't have more consolidation and unity behind my campaign on the Republican side, then you've got the prospect of two Democrats in the top two.
Quickly, we have a few minutes left. I want to ask you about what you would do to facilitate the no tax on income under $100,000. Will that take away from much needed revenues from the state? And if so, what other programs get cut?
No, it's ridiculous. We have, as I said, the highest taxes in the country. They've doubled the budget nearly in the last 10 years. In the last six years, it's up 75%. The budget needs to be dramatically cut. Now, we've started our program at CalDoge, part of my campaign, to assess the amount of fraud, waste, and abuse in our budget. We've taken a look at publicly released data on that, state auditor reports, error rates in Medi-Cal, and so on. Our estimate of the total fraud, waste, and abuse in the California budget is $425 billion over the last 5 years. That works out at about $80 on average every year. That's about 20% of the budget. To actually facilitate my tax plan, all of it, not just the first part, which you mentioned was your first 100 grand tax-free. The second part of my tax plan is a flat tax over 7.5%. The total costing of that is about $60 to $65 billion. So we've got more than enough there that we can cut. But actually, the cuts need to be bigger than that, because you've got, what's really happened to the budget is that the splurge of spending around the lockdowns and the pandemic has been baked into the baseline. So I want to bring our budget back to pre-pandemic levels, which is what's happened in most other places that have responsibility, actually care about taxpayers' money. And that's what we're going to do over the time. One further point on spending on services. Everyone says, oh, what about the services? We pay way too much for things that the government does. I'll give you a specific example. I was with some public work contractors the other week. Lady runs a business that builds roads. Javier Becerra runs around saying, well, if you cut the gas tax, which is what I want to do, how are you going to pay for the roads? Right now, this woman, she builds roads. She said it costs four times as much to build the exact same piece of road in California as it does in Texas. And you can look at that throughout our budget. I've talked to people who build schools and high schools and public buildings, two or three times as much as it would be if they weren't loaded up with all these ridiculous rules and regulations driven by the special interests that control the Democratic Party. Project labor agreements, community workforce agreements, insane environmental rules, building codes that are way over the top. All these things, everything we do in California is way too expensive, two or three times more expensive than it needs to be. And so the starting point is to get more value from the money that we currently spend.
Steve, we only have another minute. How do you get the idea of all this waste across to the Democratic voters, the people of California, and people who are anti-Trump, who may turn on you only because of your relationship with him? How do you do that in 30 seconds?
Well, it's the campaign. That's the point of the campaign. I mean, the argument I make about the president is it's going to be useful to California to have a candidate as a good working relationship with the federal administration so we can get better results. For example, opening up energy production, which will help us cut gas prices. There's a fraud task force that's in operation run by the federal government that is actually being blocked by Newsom and Rob Bonta right now. So all these things are just examples of how it's going to be positive and practical, get better results for Californians to have a business-minded, pragmatic governor who wants to work with anyone to get good results for Californians.
All right, Steve, we want to thank you so much for taking the time today. Good luck on the campaign trail. Hopefully we'll have you back on when you're in the runoff in November.
I'd love to do that. Thank you so much. Good to be with you.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that's it. Going to do it another edition of Gervie's Law. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.